"A wow," she says, pointing into the box. "These are incredible and probably 1,000 calories a muffin. I really need to get back to jogging."
"I'll take you in the morning," I promise. "Or even later in the night. And as for Juju, he lives in a place off the Hudson River that is valued at $5 million, and we traced the funds. It's not bought with drug money."
"In other words," she says, "he has no logical reason to sell drugs. This has to be driven by something in his past that isn't in this file. It says nothing about his mother. There is no career, no details on her beyond age and birth date, with a few random inconsequential facts. But she, who is petite with brown hair, like the victims, is not inconsequential. Did she have a job that I don't see listed?"
"She didn't work outside of the home, is my understanding," I say. "There is not much to know about her."
"If Juju is the killer, in theory and usually in application, there's something in his past that will connect him to these murders. It has to be related to her. Can you use your hacking skills and find out more?"
"We've hacked. We've looked."
"Have you looked up his old school friends, his old neighbors? Have you asked them questions about Juju and his family?"
"No, we have not. We've been focused on who he is now and what he might do next."
"Which is logical, of course," she says. "But if we talk to the people in his past, someone will know more about his family and maybe even him. If he's really your guy, there is something in the past we can use to link him to the murders before he kills again."
"Our guy," I correct, opening a bottle of water. "You're in this now, too." My cell phone buzzes with a text, and I grab it, only to laugh. "Blake says he forgot to get the key to your apartment." I type a message. Sierra laughs.
"Did you tell him to try the thrift shop or the subway?"
"I told him to take a toolkit."
"If I'm staying here, I need my things from there."
"If? And what things do you really need?"
"I didn't mean if, and I guess nothing. I have nothing."
"Now you do have things," I assure her. "And a paycheck that will be regular. They'll use you for other jobs."
"I don't want them to feel obligated to pay me because of you. That's not how I need or want to operate my life."
"I didn't tell him to pay you. Let me see the check." She grabs it and hands it to me. I open it and look inside before setting it back down. "That's our standard consulting fee, and it's exactly what they offer someone else. The Walker men are good men. They don't screw people. They do what's right." I hand her back the check.
"It's $10,000. That's standard?"
"They're billing the client, and if your role grows, they'll pay you additional fees."
"I don't even have my PhD.
"You have more experience than any of us with serial killers, and we're all pretty damn experienced. That's the thing about Walker. We run a deep pool of experience, and when we come up short, we fix it. We win. Turns out, we fix it and win with you this time."
"About that."
She reaches for her own file and opens it, digging through it to find her new driver's license.
"This and the money. You know I could leave."
"I've asked you before, and I'll ask you now. Is that what you want?"
"No, I don't want to leave here. Not as long as you're here. But am I being selfish? Because I want to be here with you? Because it feels good and safe to have you and your people around me?"
"No, you are not."
"If anyone dies because of me, I will never forgive myself."
I stand up and take her hand. "Come with me."
"Where are we going?"
"You'll see." I lead her back up the stairs and down the hallway to the left, and I don't stop until I'm at the locked door at the end. I key in a code there and look at her. 5571, I say. "Got it?"
"Got it."
I open the door and lead her inside, where there is a long wooden table facing us with chairs on either side. I point at the walls, left and right. Both have nearly invisible panels built in that lower and open. If you know they are there, you can see them. I motion to the one on the left and lead her across the wooden floor. I drag a finger down a small line in the wall. That's the seam.
It's nearly impossible to see. This really opens?
It really opens. I move to the center of the wall and point down. Step on the seam in the wood that is at the exact center of the wall. It's a sensitive pressure point. You touch it, it responds. I lower my foot and tap it. The wall folds down as if we've opened a suitcase lid to display my collection of small firearms.
What is all of this?
Every member of the Walker crew has a collection of weapons that could supply at least a half dozen of our staff if ever needed.
Is all of this legal?
Every last bit of it.
Then why hide it?
This is no different than the caution I gave you with the mace. Anything you can use to hurt someone, they can use to hurt you. Protect it. Protect yourself. I remove two small firearms from the shelf that I know will be suitable for her and motion behind us. We move to the table, and I round it to sit facing the wall. And at my prodding, she claims the seat across from me. I settle the weapons between us, resting side by side on the wooden surface. What do you know about guns?
Nothing except the idea of holding something that can kill someone is rather intimidating.
It is to most people, but knowledge and hands-on experience eases that feeling, as does the peace of mind in knowing you can protect yourself.
I want to learn,
she says.
What's the difference in the two guns?
This is a Ruger LCR revolver, I say, indicating the weapon on the left. Small, light, and it's going to have a small kickback when you fire, which you should be able to handle with ease. It's the best choice for you now, until you learn how to handle a semi-automatic.
Why is this my best choice now?
You don't have to load a magazine, which can be intimidating and make you freeze up if you have to reload. And you don't have to cock the gun under pressure. You'll just point and shoot. I open the cylinder. This is where your bullets go, but we're not going to load it right now. I close the cylinder. It's basically point and shoot, but it's not as easy to hit a target as you think. We're going to work on hand position and target practice. Once you master the revolver, we'll move to semi-automatic.
Why use the semi-automatic over the revolver?
Semi-automatic weapons will recoil or punch back less. The triggers are easier to manipulate. The sights are usually much bigger and better. They're prone to less malfunctions and failure than the average revolver. And most importantly, semi-autos have 2 to 3 times the ammo capacity of a revolver of equal size and weight. That means you can keep shooting if you need to.
Then shouldn't I just jump straight to whatever this other gun is?
Sig Sauer PS-238, I say. And no. I've heard women say that a handgun is like a pair of shoes. It has to fit right, and while I agree with that statement, what's more important to me is that handling it becomes as second nature as holding a pen in your hand to write. You need to be able to load fast and aim correctly. If you take a bad shot or hesitate with the recoil while you're recovering, the weapon can be taken from you.
Now I'm intimidated.
You won't be. We'll practice and practice until you don't even have to think to handle the weapon. Until you are so confident and skilled that if someone comes at you, you have a bullet with their name on it.
You mean a bullet with Devin Marks's name on it?
You're learning to protect yourself because it's smart, because that skill erases a fear you don't want to live with the rest of your life. Because you're now one of the Walker staff, and that is a mandatory part of working with us. As for Devin Marks, He's mine. I have a bullet in my gun with his name on it. You can count on it.
Chapter 26. Sierra. Asher and I spend the next few hours in the gun room, working on my skills, among other things. Once he feels that I've mastered the basics of a classroom revolver lesson, we move on to the semi-automatic. He teaches me how to load the semi-automatic and has me practice with blank bullets until my hand randomly hurts and forces a break. In between that practice, we eat Funyuns and drink beer, and he drills me about the details of my new identity to ensure I don't slip up in public. The very existence of Kelly Vincent driving me to replay Devin's plot to kill me in my head. In turn, I become more and more motivated to protect myself, to start learning how to handle a gun like the way a pro like Asher can handle a gun. Eventually, Asher grabs his computer and starts researching Juju's past, and the results at least present options his file does not offer.
We have a long list of schoolmates and neighbors, even co-workers of Juju's father, to try to connect with now. He announces, after about an hour of work, our best bet is to plan a roundtable with the team tomorrow, and all of us start making calls. You can dissect the information as we get it in.
Sounds good, I say, trying to load again, only to have my hand freeze up and I growl. I don't understand how I'm getting worse at this. I set the weapon down. I should be getting better.
Your hand is tired,
Asher says, glancing at his watch.
And it's late for Sunday shopping anyway. We need to get to a store to buy you a purse that you can carry that in.
My gaze catches on his watch, an Omega with a thick silver biker-style look with a wide black leather band. It's stylish, about $7,000, and it fits him. It also reminds me of the past I want behind me.
Sierra.
I blink and look up at Asher. Yes?
Why are you staring at my watch?
He asks, his arm resting on the table near my hand. I like it. It's very you. I reach out and cover his arm with my hand, like the tattoos. They fit you. I stroke the image of a skull that wears a scarf and looks like a pirate. A navy pirate? I ask.
Yes.
He covers my hand on his arm with his hand.
Why were you staring at my watch, Sierra?
It's not important.
It is to me, so humor me.
The Beast had me buy Omega watches for his inner circle last Christmas, an extravagant gift meant to win their loyalty. That's what he does, Asher. He buys people, or he threatens them, or he kills them like he wants to kill me. Asher stares at me for several beats, his lashes half veiled, and pulls his arm back and starts to unbuckle his watch. I cover it with my hand. What are you doing?
We're getting rid of him in every way.
He doesn't get that much control. Keep the watch, Asher. I really do like it on you. I want it to be about you. It is about you. The only reason that man is on my mind is because he's dangerous, and I don't even have the evidence to prove it. I left it in Texas, okay?
No,
he says.
It's not okay, but it's going to be.
He leans over the table, cups my neck, and kisses me. A deep, drugging kiss before he says,
"Let's get out of here."
He stands up.
"Leave the weapons out for now. One or both will be on your person once we get that purse. There's a Bloomingdale's not far from here."
I stand up and study him, certain that Bloomingdale's and purses is not what's on his mind. I see that in his face. I feel it in his energy. I open my mouth to ask where that confession over the watch has taken him, but his cell phone rings. He pulls it from his pocket and glances at the screen.
Blake,
he tells me, and motions to the file laying on the table.
Grab your new ID.
I flip through the file and snap up my driver's license and stare down at the girl named Kelly Vincent, who looks like me. The person I have to become if I let Devin Marks win. I stick the ID in my pocket and head out of the room and hunt down my purse and phone. Asher heads on downstairs, and I snatch my purse from the bathroom and follow him, but I don't hear a word he's saying to Blake. I'm thinking about Kelly Vincent, the girl with the Beast in the mirror, who has to find a way to break that glass. A few minutes later, Asher and I step onto the street, and he settles his arm around my shoulders and pulls me close to him, our hips aligned. We walk at a decent speed, trying to hit the stores before they close, but still tucked in close, steps paced together. And I wonder if I ever walked a sidewalk with Devin in this way. If I did, I can't even remember it, and that's probably because it wasn't like this. I didn't feel safe. I didn't feel warm all over, despite an early evening chill, signaling that late October is finally here. "What did Blake say?" I ask, since they literally didn't hang up until a few moments ago, even talking through the struggle of bad elevator service.
"Kara got into your apartment," he says. "So far, Juju is at home and hasn't left."
"What about Terrence? He could be helping Juju? Or someone else, even?"
"You think that someone might be helping Juju with the actual murders, not just feeding him information they think is related to his drug deals?"
"The son of Sam insisted he was part of a cult. He even named the members, but waited until they died. I could name other examples, so do I think it's possible?" "Yes."
"If that's the case, Terrence would be an obvious target, or someone from another bar. He has no other communications. He's a loner. But I told Blake about the work we've done on Juju. We're going to meet at the office at 10 tomorrow. Luke and Jacob will be there as well."
"Who will be watching Juju?" I ask.
"Chance, our new guy, is proving stealthy. He's going to follow Juju, while Rick, another newer recruit, is watching Terrence."
"Kara will be watching for anyone suspicious, not just Juju, right?"
"She's sharp and smart, but so is Blake, and that man would die for her. No one is getting to her. Of that, I'm certain. Like no one is getting to you, Sierra."
He kisses my head, and I swear I feel a squeeze in my heart. I'm falling for this man. I'm leaning on him. I trust him, and I didn't think I could ever trust again. But just as he's protecting me, I need to protect him. I'm just not sure how to do that. I'm not sure I haven't already ensured I can't do that. We head down into the subway, and soon we're on a nearly empty train and sitting at the end of a bench.
"Kara wants you to call her,"
Asher says.
"Why don't you let me put her number and about half a dozen others in your phone?"
I pull it from my purse. "Why does Kara want me to call her?"
"Blake didn't say."
He keys in her number and tags it with her name before adding several more.
"Okay,"
he says when he's done.
"You have me, Luke, his wife Julie, Kara, Blake, Royce, and his wife Lauren."
He glances at me.
"I'm still going. You have Jacob, who you will meet tomorrow, and Kyle and Myla. They're gone now, but Kyle and I are close."
"Which is why you want to tell him about Alvarez."
"Which is why Blake and I have to have that conversation, and preferably tonight. As for the numbers I've put in your phone, consider these people your safe inner circle now. I trust them with my life, and that means yours. Memorize them. If you get separated from me and you can't reach me, then you call them."
"In what order?"
"Luke first,"
he says.
"But any of the brothers after him."
"Luke first because he's your SEAL brother?"
"Yes, exactly. I know him and how he thinks better than anyone else on our team."
The train stops and we exit, hand in hand. I'm getting used to my hand in his. I'm getting used to his gorgeous tattoos. I'm getting used to his kisses. We climb the stairs and exit to the street, and it's not long until we're in the handbag section of Bloomingdale's, with Asher giving me instructions on what we're looking for.
"Pick something you like, but we'll be able to wear crossbody. That way it is always attached to your hip. You want it to be small enough that it doesn't impede you if you have to move quickly. You want it to have easy access to the weapon, with a top slit, but it needs to zip. That way no one can reach inside and grab the gun."
"Don't I need a permit to carry?" I ask as we start to look around.
"Yes,"
Asher says.
"But that requires you go to the sheriff's office. You aren't getting one now. We don't want that kind of attention."
That response is oddly comforting. He gets it. Law enforcement is a problem for me, for us, now. A pretty redhead stops in front of us.
"Can I help you find something?"
"Yes,"
Asher says. And if he notices how truly stunning she is, he doesn't show it at all.
"We need a bag this size."
He holds up a small bag.
"But it needs to zip at the top and be large enough for a handgun."
I gape at him for repeating what he's just told me, including the part about the gun, but the woman is unfazed.
"I know the perfect bag."
She turns and starts walking. "Did you really just tell her we need a bag for a gun?"
"Would you rather me say an umbrella?"
"Smartass," I chide. "And yes, maybe."
"She's a carrier."
"How do you know?" He winks.
I get gun mojo off of people.
He takes my hand.
Come on.
We hurry forward and meet the gun-carrying red-headed store clerk at the Prada counter. This is the Quilted Bowler crossbody bag, she says, holding up a purse. It has a zipper and a spacious interior that will hold a small handgun. And it's a steal at just under $1,800. The Paradigm tote matches it well if you ever need more space. It's $2,000, and you can fit a small computer inside right along with a smaller purse.
We'll take them both,
Asher says, and then looks at me.
If you like them.
I do, but...
We'll take them.
Asher repeats. The woman lights up. Excellent! She motions to a register. Let's head that direction. She grabs both bags and starts walking. I, in turn, grab Asher's arm.
$4,000 for purses?
Yeah, what about it?
It's too much.
The bags work. You like them. We can get something else later in the week if you want.
No, I don't. Asher,
he kisses me.
I like buying you things. Another first for me. Don't make that a bad thing.
The way he says it, the roughness of his voice, the sincerity undoes me. With Devin, everything was about his power and control. With Asher, it is something far different that I can't even name, but I also can't argue. Thank you. His eyes warm.
You're here. That's all I need.
Just like that, my heart squeezes again, and once again his fingers are linked with mine, and we're headed to the register. After Asher is paid, and I've stuffed my temporary purse and the new smaller Prada inside the larger bag, which has a strap I use crossbody, we leave the store. We step outside into the chill of the now murky darkness outdoors, the stars covered by clouds. We start walking, and a block down the street, with Asher by my side and his arm back around my shoulders, I have a sudden realization. For the first time in 9 months, I've forgotten to look over that shoulder. I'm far from out of danger, and yet this man is the right kind of beast, the kind everyone else should fear, the kind that makes Devin Marks quake in his shoes. Good versus evil. Asher versus Devin. No, me versus the beast. Whatever the case, while moments ago I'd felt safe, now I feel like this is the calm before the storm. And as if driving home that point, thunder rumbles in the near distance, perhaps the too near distance, and with it comes a sense of foreboding. The beast is near. He will always be near unless I shut him down. But how do you shut down someone with a worldwide network? Even if you kill that person, that network exists. That network still keeps coming.
Chapter 27. Asher. It's all about the watch. Sierra and I take the subway back to the apartment, and I continue the mental path that I've been on since her reaction to me simply looking at my watch. Time matters. I know all too well, from experience, that too much or too little of anything, most specifically time, can get a person killed. That, along with the vivid image in my mind of Devin Marks shooting two children and an innocent mother, killing them all, becomes a stark, sharp reminder that he wields a blade that he will use to cut anyone in his path. Sierra knows this. She's afraid, and that fear is driving her actions. They can't drive mine, no matter how hard I have to push her. We exit the subway, and our path to the apartment takes us past the door of Walker Security, where I pause. I need to talk to Luke and Blake, too, if he's back from your apartment, and then we can run by the grocery store.
I thought we were going by the Walker offices in the morning.
Tomorrow we'll have a room full of people focused on Juju, as they should be. I need to discuss Kyle and Mila, among other things.
Of course,
she says.
But the office looks dark.
I unlock the door. We'll walk through to the stairs. It's the only way to get to the living quarters outside of the garage. I flip on the light and hold the door for her. She enters, and in a few minutes we've locked back up, and we're on the other side of the building, flipping the office lights back out and climbing the wide wooden steps.
Do the brothers all live on the same floor?
Used to, I say. With a baby coming, Royce and Lauren wanted more space. They just remodeled an unfinished floor and moved in. Kyle and Myla took their old place. We reach the floor that is our destination. This is it. We take a few steps to the forked hallway directly in front of us. Left is Blake and Kara. Right is Luke and Julie. Down the hall behind us is Kyle and Myla, when they're here. I lead her to Luke and Julie's place and ring the bell. Almost immediately, Luke opens the door in his typical uniform of jeans and a Walker t-shirt. "Come in, you two," he says, his tone welcoming. That's Luke. Easygoing. Cool as fuck until you give him a reason to be deadly. Most people will never see the ladder. I have. And right about now, that ladder is what I like most about him. Julie and Lauren are in the kitchen. He backs up, and I urge Sierra forward. Do I smell cookies? I ask as Sierra moves down the hallway. Yes, Luke says. Because apparently now Lauren and her baby can eat only cookies, cucumbers, and ranch dip. What happened to the ice cream? I say as I join him in the hallway. It makes her sick now. He shuts the door.
Sierra!
At the sound of Julie greeting Sierra like she already knows her, I give Luke a quiet, "We need to talk in private." I assumed as much, Luke says, as our women disappear around the corner. Luke and I follow, bringing his newly remodeled apartment into view. The new floors, some kind of dark grayish-brown wood. The entire place looking like a spread from a magazine I've never read, nor will I ever read. The formerly flat ceiling is now inset low. The living area to the left is done in muted white couches and a boxy table. We head in the other direction toward the open kitchen where Lauren sits at the head of a long teak wood table I've never seen before, with a glass of milk and cookies in front of her. I look at Luke. To think you used to just have some brown couch and a glass table someone told you to buy. Luke laughs. Marriage changes things, man, and not for the worse.
You want a cookie?
Julie asks, looking every bit the Marilyn Monroe twin people call her, as she carries a tray to the table.
I would love a cookie,
Sierra says, sitting down on a chair next to Lauren that looks like a damn tree trunk. Who wants a tree trunk in their house? I really need a damn cookie, I say, walking to the table and taking two, before giving Sierra a wink and then joining Luke at the island a few feet away. Both of us sitting on some fancy silver stools facing the girls.
That's the new Prada release,
Julie says, fawning over Sierra's new bags.
I didn't know this was out already. Can I see it?
Lauren asks. Meanwhile, I down my last cookie and interrupt with a more urgent manner. Do I have to be pregnant to get milk around here? Sierra looks up at me at the same time Lauren does, both of them brunette beauties. A fact that has me flashing back to Royce's furious reaction to Blake taking the juju case when the women looked like Lauren and Kara, and now Sierra. I'd thought he was overly protective. I don't anymore. Funny how a shot of mace and the woman who tortured me with it have quickly changed my perspective.
About that milk, Asher?
Lauren says, snapping me back to the present.
You get milk if you're pregnant or an asshole. You qualify as at least one of those two things.
You've been hanging around Blake too much, I say. You used to be so nice. She laughs.
You know I love you, and you can have all the milk you want. It's Julie and Luke's. I have my own.
She looks at Sierra.
I hear you have a PhD in psychology, and you've actually interviewed several living serial killers.
Sierra's gaze shoots to mine, and Luke hands me a pint of milk. That's my big mouth talking there, Sierra, Luke says. Lauren's a criminal defense attorney. I told her I thought you might help her on a few of her cases. What's said in this room stays in this room, I tell her. Lauren covers Sierra's hand with hers.
What happens in this building is like Vegas. It stays here.
She smiles at Sierra.
Sometimes it's even just as exciting.
And there it is. One of the reasons I brought Sierra here tonight. I wanted her to feel the bond that is this family unit, be it family by blood or those extended members like myself. Sierra shares a look of understanding with me before she smiles at Lauren.
Thank you. And no, I don't have a PhD. Not yet. Close, or maybe never.
Never say never, I say. Not in the Walker clan.
We'd love to hear about the interviews you've done,
Lauren says.
And we're going to help make calls on the Juju case tomorrow. Julie has client meetings, but I've been so sick that I've been taking Mondays and Fridays off when I can.
You both practice criminal law?
Sierra asks. Isn't Royce back tomorrow? I ask quickly, trying to avoid the topic of Julie's legal specialty of high-profile divorces that might hit a hot spot.
He got delayed,
Lauren tells me.
He won't be back until Wednesday.
Which means I'm going to need to call him. The doorbell rings, and before Luke can even get up, Blake and Kara are walking into the room. Do I smell cookies? Blake says, making a beeline for the kitchen.
Do not eat all of my cookies, Blake,
Lauren warns while Kara sits down next to Sierra. Of course I won't eat all of the pregnant woman's cookies, Blake says, already at the table and taking two of them. Why would you think I would be that cruel? Because you're a pig, I say. We all know it. Lauren and Kara chime in agreement. And there is laughter that pretty much sums up the room's agreement on that point. There is also an exchange between Sierra and Kara that ends in more laughter, with their heads tilted low in conversation in a budding friendship. Conversation flows for a good 15 minutes, and there is a point in the midst of many voices and more laughter when Sierra's lashes lower, a bittersweet look on her face. She likes them. She trusts them, but she's confused in some way. I eye Luke, and he says, Now? Now.
Blake?
He asks. Just you right now, I say, wanting to talk about Sierra, but also Kyle, and to do so with someone objective about Alvarez, which Blake is not. We both stand, and Luke indicates the cantilevered wood and steel staircase. I pause behind Sierra, my hands on her shoulders, and lean down to her ear. I'll just be a few minutes. She covers my hand with hers and nods, and I catch Lauren's warm look at our intimacy. They get it. I'm crazy about her. I have to free her. I lean in and kiss Sierra before I leave her there, and follow Luke up the stairs that are just wide enough for one. We enter what equates to a den with a corner bar, pool table, and a brown leather couch framing a stainless steel fireplace, two matching chairs on either side of both. Luke and I claim the pair of chairs that face the stairs, keeping any company in view. Are we talking about Kyle or Sierra? Luke asks. Both, I say. What's your opinion on the Kyle Alvarez situation? I'm torn, man. The buzz about Alvarez being alive could be nothing more than the cartel trying to play a game with law enforcement or a rival cartel. In other words, these rumors could float around for a lifetime, I say. Kyle and Myla can't hide for the rest of theirs. Agreed, he says. But I do think that the two of them being in Europe while we investigate is a good idea, and Myla was traumatized by that man. At least when we tell her, we can give her the facts. We can't let this drag out. Agreed again, Luke says. But right now, We have Juju to deal with and whatever is going on with Sierra. We. Not me. Not my problem. Not her problem. This is the part of the Walker clan I hope Sierra is starting to understand downstairs right now. I need one of the Walker planes.
When?
Sunrise. I want to get there and get back as soon as possible, and it's not a short trip.
What can you tell me?
I'm going to Dallas to get the ammunition I need to make Sierra's problem go away. But when I'm there, I'm going to talk Adam into joining us. Does that recruitment bonus still stand?
Hell yeah! We need him.
He narrows his eyes on me. Do you need him while you're there? Yes. He studies me a few beats.
Do you need me?
I need you to protect Sierra.
That would be easier if you told me what was going on.
She doesn't trust anyone but me, and believe me, man, when you find out what this is, you'll understand.
That's why you brought her here. To get her familiar with everyone and how we operate.
Yes, it is.
Give me something here, Luke says. Give me a scale. On a scale of missions, Cambodia to Syria. How does this rank? How bad is this?
Sierra steps into the room.
Bad enough for me to go to that safe house you offered me.
I stand up and so does Luke. You don't need a safe house, Sierra, I say. You have me.
And me, Luke says.
I believe you, she says. I believe everyone in this house would help me.
She looks at me.
I know that's why you brought me here, and thank you. It worked. They're great, they're wonderful, they're all wonderful.
Whatever you're running from, Luke says.
We can... I'm not running, she says. I want to fight. I want to shut him down forever, if that is even possible, but I can't do that while placing other people in the line of fire. I need to go to that safe house, Luke. You have to be the one to take me there. He can't see it because he's... We're... It's just... It's the right move.
We'll talk about it, Luke says.
We can talk on the way out of here,
she presses. Sierra, I say.
No, Asher,
she says.
No to whatever you're going to say.
Whoever this is,
Luke interjects.
Or whatever this is.
Devin Marks.
Sierra shocks me by saying.
I'm his wife, who he wants dead. Are you ready for me to leave now?
She holds up a hand.
Don't answer. Don't be the hero like Asher right now. I'm going to do the right thing, the thing two seals would do. I'm leaving before someone gets hurt.
She turns and heads down the stairs.
Chapter 28. Sierra. The minute I turn to go down the stairs, I find Blake standing in front of me.
Welcome to your safe house, he says.
My mind explodes with one word. No. No, no, no. What part of I'm married and Asher is trying to get himself killed does this man not understand? Do you even know who Devin Marks is? I demand.
I'm ex-ATF, sweetheart. Yes, I know who he is.
What does the ATF have to do with him? He sells military weapons.
Some of which ended up in Mexico in cartel hands, more than once.
Asher's hands come down on my shoulders.
Come sit down, Sierra.
I turn to face him. I'm married, Asher, to another man. What part of that do you not understand? And now, they, all your people, know that fact.
Sierra?
Why don't you get it? I demand, curling my fingers around his shirt. You can't run off to Dallas and plot some attack. You can't do it. I'm married to a man who will kill you all. He's not you. I'm married to another man. He kisses me, and he kisses me like no one is watching, like he'd kissed me in the thrift store, his hands on my face, his lips on my lips, and his tongue stroking deep, long. And when his mouth parts mine, he says,
"That's how much I care about your marriage to a man who wants to kill you."
"You cannot..."
"I can,"
he says.
"I will."
"They all know. They all know I'm married now." He lowers his forehead to mine.
"Stop, Sierra. I know what you're doing."
"I'm trying to leave." He pulls back and looks down at me.
"You're freaked out about me going to Dallas. I'm going to get the evidence you gathered. I'm going to get him. And I'm not going to let you go. I'm not backing away from this."
My chest knots, and I have a rare moment in all of this where I want to cry. "I don't want you to die. I don't want anyone to die because of me." He cups my face.
"Easy, sweetheart. We're okay. I'm okay. No one is going to die. That's the reason we take action, to stop him from killing again. Come sit. We'll figure it out, yes?"
"You're a stubborn, stubborn man."
"And you're a stubborn, brave woman."
He kisses me.
"Come."
He laces his fingers with mine, and I don't pull away. I cave to the moment and let him walk me into the room, but I don't give up on my cause, which is protecting him, because he's not going to give up on me and protecting me. In other words, my only other option is to try to get the Walker brothers on my side and drag him out of this. With that in mind, I let Asher lead me further into the room to a chair while he claims the one next to me, and Blake and Luke sit across from us.
"I'm going to let you tell your story, Sierra,"
Asher says. And I know this is because he doesn't want to tell more than I want told, because this man is pretty much perfect, except for his hero complex. "I married him thinking he was Prince Charming," I tell the Walker brothers. "Turns out he's the beast under the bridge." I pull the recorder from my pocket and play it for them. When it's over, Luke looks at Asher.
"We should have killed him when we had the chance." "My exact thought,"
Asher agrees.
"That was Norman Casey, the deputy director of intelligence at the CIA on that tape with Marks, wasn't it?"
Luke asks.
"Yes,"
Asher says.
"It was, and to make matters even more complicated, Sierra went to a federal agent in Dallas for help. He turned on her." "What's the name?"
Blake asks, pulling his phone from his pocket. "Dirk Bennett," I say. "He's high up the chain." He types a text message and then looks at us all.
"I just group texted Royce and Kara and asked if either know him."
"Devin Marks has connections in every agency and armed service operation," I say. "People you think you trust are with him, I promise you. Dirk, I liked him. I thought he was a good guy, and I don't know why you want me to help with Juju or why I thought I could. I didn't figure him out." Blake leans forward, arms on his knees.
"When you're studying a killer, you look for the bad you know exists, even if it's in someone who is just a suspect. When you're with someone who is supposed to be in law enforcement, you look for good, because that's what the fuck they are supposed to be. And everyone in our inner circle knows this."
Asher assures me.
"We know bad hides inside good all the damn time."
"You can't be sure everyone on your team is clean," I argue. "It's impossible."
"You're right,"
Luke says.
"But all of us have a handful of people we completely trust. When you bring that list together, it's powerful. We need to know what we're bringing them together for, though,"
Asher says, looking at me.
"We need in that lockbox."
I want to tell him to back away. I want to tell him this is insanity. He knows. He reads me and says,
"This isn't just about our lives. Every weapon he sells to an enemy could kill an American soldier or one of our allies' soldiers. Worse,"
Luke says,
"innocent women and children, not to mention however many more people end up having the accidents you've accounted for."
Now it's my turn for a reality check. They're right. It's a thought I've had in the past, but staying sane when I had no option but to run meant setting it aside. I look at Asher. "The key is in my money belt in your safe." He gives me a nod and looks at Blake.
"If I leave at sunrise, if we leave at sunrise,"
Luke says,
"I'm coming with."
Asher gives him a nod this time.
"If we leave at sunrise,"
he says,
"we can watch the box for a day and grab it and leave Tuesday. That gets me back in plenty of time to be at the bar Wednesday night."
"I thought we weren't due in until Friday," I say.
"We're on call for Wednesday and Thursday,"
Asher explains.
and so far I've been called into work both days.
Blake's phone buzzes, and he looks down at his messages.
Kara doesn't know Agent Bennett, but Royce has heard of him.
He sets his phone on the round stone coffee table.
I'll contact Royce on a secure line when we're done and find out more.
He says to us all before focusing on me.
And we'll look out for you here, Sierra. What you did to get here, what you're doing now, it's all the right choices and brave. Very brave. Agree, 100%,
Luke says.
And Sierra, my wife is one of the top divorce attorneys in the country. She's sought out by movie stars and athletes, and I promise you she will tell you this isn't a marriage you're in. It's a prison with a death sentence that is his, not yours.
This hasn't gone as I thought it would in my mind. I didn't get any sense talked into Asher. I made myself the scorned married bitch who was going to hurt Asher. Do not underestimate him, I say, standing up. None of you get to die, I say. Not one of you. None of you. I turn and start walking. Asher is behind me in an instant, and just before we clear the wall, I stop and turn to him. Please don't stop to talk. I need out of here. His hands settle on my waist.
They're on your side, just like I am.
I'm married.
Stop fucking saying that. It only makes me want to fly to Denver and kill him now.
You don't listen. I turn and head down the stairs, only to find Kara, Julie, and a very pregnant Lauren now standing at the bottom. I inhale and let it out, starting down the steps, not sure what to expect. When I reach the lower level, Julie steps forward. If he lives, you have a divorce attorney.
I'm not letting him live,
Asher says. Then I'll help you kill him, Kara says.
And I'll be everyone's criminal attorney,
Lauren says. They're all exaggerating, of course. Or I think they are. You're all insane. Asher slides his arm around my shoulders.
Isn't it beautiful?
He doesn't give me time to respond. He eyes the three musketeers in front of us.
We're going home.
And with that, he turns us toward the door. Home. We're going home. As if his place is my place. This idea burns 100 emotions in my belly.
See you tomorrow, Sierra.
Julie shouts out, followed by a similar goodbye from Kara and Lauren while I grab my tote on the way past the table. Once we're in the hallway with the door shut, Asher doesn't look at me. He leads me forward and toward the stairs. Asher, I say as we start down them.
Not now, when we're alone.
He's angry. I get it. I sideswiped him. Well, he sideswiped me too, asking Luke for a plane and deciding to go get my lockbox open. Anger crackles between us and about 20 other things, some of which are way too early to name. I may never have the luxury of naming some of the things I might feel for this man. That he doesn't get that just burns inside me, like his touch burns up my arm and across my chest. We exit Walker security and cross the street. More silence between us. The elevator is next, and when I would retreat to one side as I had before, he doesn't let that happen. He catches my waist from behind and places me between him and the panel.
Key in the code,
he orders, and I know he's testing me, making sure I know what I need to know when he's gone. Damn him, still trying to take care of me. The elevator opens, and he takes my hand in his and leads me forward. More of that hard determination in his steps, that anger between us damn near explosive now. I don't let him continue to take the lead. I'm the one who took action tonight for a good reason. I step ahead of him and key in the code to the door. He walks me inside from behind, his big body up against mine, and the minute we're in the foyer, he shoves the door shut and pulls me to him, his fingers tangling in my hair. Asher, damn it! He kisses me, a drugging, intense kiss that I don't fight. He tastes of a heady mix of confident male and power that consumes and overwhelms me in all the right ways. I kiss him back, my hands pressing to the strong line of his shoulder blades, until too soon his lips part from mine, those green eyes of his piercing.
You won't be married to him for long. That's a promise.
He doesn't give me time to argue.
Don't claim him as your husband again. I don't like it.
Chapter 29. Asher. I set Sierra away from me,
focused on a list of things I need to get done before I leave her alone for 2 days. Come with me and bring your purse. I don't wait for a reply. I start walking with purpose, across the living room and up the stairs, and I don't stop until I'm back in the weapons room, behind the table. I don't sit. She enters the room, the look on her beautiful, stubborn face as determined as I feel. She crosses to stand in front of me. "Set your bag down," I order. She does it, clearly aware that right now I'm all business. "Now," I say, "I want you to put your revolver in your purse, but before you reach for it, tell me everything you've learned."
"Never point it at anyone that I don't want to shoot. Align my index finger for accuracy."
She repeats everything I've taught her methodically, to finally add,
"Shoot to kill. Anyone I injure could be pissed off enough to kill me instead."
"Grab your new purse and put the revolver inside, positioned to grab and point." She nods and follows that instruction, appearing focused on what I'm teaching her. "Put the strap across your chest, purse at your hip." While she does that, I round the table and step behind her, my big body encasing her smaller one, and I push past the fact that I'm rock hard. "That's a loaded weapon," I say, my hands on her shoulders. "Zip the purse and practice unzipping it and pulling the weapon." She struggles and makes a frustrated noise.
"Do you have to stand behind me like that?"
"Is that making you feel performance pressure?"
"Yes,"
she says,
"among other things."
"Good, because if you have to pull that gun, you'll be scared shitless." I turn her to face me, hands on her hips. The idea that carrying a gun is as simple as point and shoot is false. You need to practice when I'm gone. I release her and grab the semi-automatic, expelling the cartridge. "Where are the bullets?" I ask.
"Inside the cartridge."
I remove them. "Put them in again."
"Asher, can we just..."
"Do it, Sierra." I'm pushing her. I know I am, but one thing sitting with Luke and talking about Devin Marks did for me was remind me that Marks really will kill Sierra if he gets the chance. "This is me helping you protect you."
"Yes, you're right."
She loads the blanks I have her using and then pops the cartridge into place. "Cock it," I say. And that's where she and most people slow down. She has to focus to get her hand right and get the job done. "Hand it to me," I say, and she manages to point it at me.
"Damn it,"
she says. "That's why you practice without real ammunition, but I'm going to see if Jacob can take you to the shooting range. He's a sharpshooter with a calm, cool disposition. He's also stoic as hell, which means intimidating. Those are all skills you need to have when handling any firearm."
"I'd ask to wait on you, but I get it. I need to learn now."
"Yes, you do." I walk around the table and open a closet, removing a case for the pistol and returning. I show Sierra how it fits in place. "We'll take it with us in the morning. That way, if he has time, he can just swing by and get you at Walker Security. Put it in that big black bag thing we bought."
"A tote,"
she says, her full pink lips quirking, her pale skin flushed.
"But big black thing works too."
God, she's beautiful and selfless enough to try to stop me from helping her, when of course she's human. She wants the help. She even knows she needs it, which is exactly why I'm staying focused on preparing for my trip. "This way," I say, heading out of the gun room, down the hallway, and into the bedroom, this time continuing on through the bathroom to the closet and safe. Sierra joins me, and I motion her forward. "Open it." She does as I say, And I'm under no misconception that this means she's going to make a habit of taking orders. She gets it. She's in danger. I'm preparing her for the worst. She unlocks the safe and removes her money belt, unzips it, and hands me the key.
It's at a storage facility a few blocks from the DFW airport. It's the only thing in the unit, and the building locks.
She gives me the address, and I text it to Luke and Blake. I need to call one of my SEAL brothers in Dallas, and yes, I trust him. How about ordering us some food? Anything. Pizza is probably easiest.
What do you like?
Anything and everything. I cup her face and kiss her. I'll be in my office. It's just past the gunroom. Hang your clothes in the closet.
I hung up some of it.
Her words from our fight back at Luke's place replay in my mind. I'm married to another man, and punch me in the damn chest. Some is not good enough right now. Fuck, Sierra, convince me you're staying. I let her go and walk out of the closet, hating the idea of leaving her here, but knowing damn well that she gave me that key because she trusts me. I head down the hallway and walk into my office and cross to the wooden writer's desk with cross legs that I wouldn't have if Kyle's wife, Myla, hadn't decided to use her design skills to decorate every male home in the Walker clan. She'd called the desk a statement piece, or some shit like that. It's supposed to complement the brick and wood finish of the walls. I told her, whatever. Decorating is not my thing, but hell, I'm glad she did it now that Sierra is here. I bypass the desk and walk up the three steps that lead to a sitting area behind a wooden railing, where two leather chairs and a table sit in front of an arched window. My thinking spot. And for a few minutes, that's all I do. Think. I start to process the people in my mind that can help me end Devin Marks beyond my SEAL team. And there are only a few I trust completely. I dial Luke. Are we on the same page? Yes, he says. The only reason I haven't done it is that I was waiting to talk to you. I'll do it. I disconnect, open the drawer in the table next to me, and pull out a disposable phone. I dial the number that only a small group of 10 SEALs know, some active and some not. Once the line connects, I type in a 10-digit code that identifies me and sends a message. Be ready for war. Over the course of the next 24 hours, everyone who is able will check in with a location. I stick the phone back in the drawer and return to my regular line and call one of those SEALs direct. He answers on the first ring. No, I don't want a job. Well, I got one for you anyway, I say. It's personal. I need you. When and where? I'm coming to you and I'm bringing Luke. We'll be on the ground by 10 tomorrow. He pauses, and there is movement before he says, I just got the notification. I'll be waiting when you get here. We disconnect, and I push to my feet, walking down the hallway and into the bedroom to find Sierra nowhere in sight. I walk through the bathroom and step into the doorway of the closet to find her hanging her things next to my Navy fatigues. Seeing her clothes there, next to mine, should freak me the fuck out, considering commitment isn't my thing. But that's not what bothers me. It's how little she has. I reach into my wallet and remove a credit card. I've just stuck my wallet back into my pocket when she turns around and lifts her hands to her things.
Does that prove I'm fucking staying?
She challenges. It's a start, I say, closing the space between us and offering her the card. Go shopping online, or if Kara can take you, with her. And I mean shop. Shoes, clothes, dresses, whatever you need. The things you need to start over here.
I'm not taking that card or buying more clothes.
You have nothing, Sierra, I say, and driving her to a certain response I want her to give me, I add, if you don't do it, I will.